We made this.
Welcome to the Starlight Ballroom. Hey.
Hello and welcome to Shipwrecked and Comatose, the podcast about Red Dwarf, here on the We Made This podcast network. My name is Mark Adams, and I am your host for this fifth of the 7 weekly episodes on the Smegazines.
Daily.
Yeah, they're daily. Yeah, I'm not going to edit that either. Cool. They're daily.
Go with it.
With me at this time, unsurprisingly, is Colin Jackson-Brown. Hello, Colin.
You're all right.
And Carl Bryan. Hello, Carl.
Hey, homeboys. Let's posse.
Good. I'm glad you did that. Yeah, so I can't be bothered with a massive introduction this time. Last episode's was really fucking long. So should we talk about Smegazine episode 12?
I think we should speak about Smegazine issue 12. Yes.
Yeah.
The front cover has some very cool artwork of scutters in hats because it's advertising the good, the bad, and the scutter. And it also tells you that there are 25 Red Dwarf books to be won.
There is.
Mm. I really like the front cover. I love the scutters, and I know that they were cut because of the same reason K-9 was cut from Doctor Who, that they were just an absolute pig to do anything with. But that doesn't matter in comic book form, does it?
No, I'm trying to remember, because I always think about this when we talk about scutters now, if they've actually brought, I can't remember if they brought them back in the Dave ones, because the technology is probably there for it to be a lot better. Oh, if there was drones, we could have flying scutters.
If they are there in one of the late ones I've not got to yet, I'm going to go, yeah!
Me too. I miss the scutters. So, on the contents page, it is just like highlights rather than expansive like it has been for the last couple of issues. And it also has the competition to win the books that was advertised on the front cover. And the questions are really fucking easy.
I've just noticed something from the previous issue. So... In the Read Any Good Books Lately bit, there was the, was it the Red Dwarf episode guide?
Mm-hmm.
Where they were going on about how the episode guides were really, really crap. So the Red Dwarf program guide, that is one of the prizes here, is basically the same thing, but written by Steve Lyons, who writes for this magazine. So that might be why he was saying that this rival one that does exactly the same thing isn't as good.
You don't want to win that. You want to win this.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
But Steve Lyons has written some really good shit, so I'm going to let him get away with that. Nice one, Steve.
To this day, and I listen to a lot of audiobooks, I think we all listen to a good share of audiobooks and podcasts, I still forget the difference, which one means is longer, unabridged or abridged.
Unabridged is longer.
Unabridged is longer, right, okay.
Unabridged is an exact reading of the text. Abridged is edited to be better, in inverted commas, for an audio format.
Yeah, because I used to listen to, talking about yesterday's episode, when we're on paper rounds, I used to listen to audiobooks as I was doing paper rounds. So I used to listen to the abridged versions of the first two books a lot. And then when I remember sitting down to read them, I was like, what's all this? And to me, if I ever think about the plot of the books, it's the abridged version.
Yeah, we had the abridged tape. So two cassettes of Infinity Welcomes Careful Drivers, but this prize is the unabridged version, so it's 6 tapes.
Yeah.
So that means they basically cut it down to a third of the book.
Yeah, I've never, ever wanted to read abridged versions, but I think, like you, as a kid, they were more readily available than the unabridged versions.
Yeah.
Whereas I think it's actually the opposite these days, that you might struggle to find abridged versions of anything, because what's the fucking point?
Yeah.
They're so tiny when it comes to how much space it takes up on your mobile phone, or... Yeah, I just... yeah, no one wants abridged anymore, surely.
I mean, it's a bit weird back then as well, because where I used to get most of these things, I'm not sure about you two, is places like Little Chefs and like travel cafe things, which if the majority of people probably buying them are like truck drivers, so they're probably going to want unabridged anyway because they're in a truck all day.
But... driving to my nan's in Wales is where we used to listen to the most story tapes, as we always used to call them. And yeah, it was the Happy Eater at Ross on Wye that we used to buy most of them from.
Yeah, I don't want to brag, lads, but back in the day, I had one of those Walkmans that automatically changed sides.
Nice.
Yeah. There was no messing about for me on a car journey. Tape in, uninterrupted audiobooks.
So we weren't allowed audiobooks in the car.
Mm.
And it was basically my dad's music taste, which was Elky Brooks, Gloria Estefan, and very little else.
That's an interesting one, that, Mark.
Yeah.
Was it Gloria and the Miami Sound Machine?
Both.
Oh, man.
Yeah. He did have more than one Gloria Estefan tape. He had Cut Both Ways, Into the Light, the Spanish cover versions one, and another one.
It's good to see it's not burnt into your psyche at all, Mark, many years later.
It cuts both ways. Your love is like a knife. It cuts both ways. Don't... Moving on.
Most knives only have a like sharpened bit on one side of the blade.
Not in Gloria Estefan's kitchen, they don't.
That would be more like a dagger, wouldn't it? Anyway.
That doesn't fit the song.
It's very dangerous in Miami.
I've completely lost track.
We're on the contents page, Mark.
Are we still on the contents page? Right. Jake Bullitt and the case of the cashed-in contestant part 3 is the next thing. It's a straight-ass continuation of the two-pager that they've set up. And, yeah, I really like this. I still really like this.
It's like a Miriam's photo casebook on drugs. In the terms of the very realistic, what looks like it's a photograph with Photoshop layers over the top, or it's been drawn on.
I think at that point it's probably drawn on. It's probably not digital.
Yeah.
In 92. Yeah, the artwork, as I've said on both of the previous times, it's utterly brilliant. I did a bit of research into the artist because I'd already done a couple like that on the last one, so I thought I'd save this for this one. It's Carl Flint, who used to do a lot of illustrations for Enemy.
Oh, so okay. That's very much your wheelhouse.
It is. It was a little bit before I was reading Enemy. It was sort of late 80s to about 95-ish. But I had a look on his website, and there is there's a PJ Harvey picture that I definitely have seen around over the years. I'm sure I've seen it on a T-shirt at some point. But since then, he's done a lot of work on... he does a lot of storyboards. And his website's got loads of adverts that he's done storyboards for, but it also mentions that he's like done storyboarding for Ridley Scott, which is pretty impressive.
Damn. Yeah.
Also, you've got Jake Bullitt's opening line in this episode, Dr. Hall, do you believe in life-threatening danger on a first date? Which is, it's a good line. I like it.
Very, yeah.
It is a good line. The other thing I like in this is that they utilise the metallic head element of the Jake Bullitt character that was kind of done just originally to differentiate Bullitt from Crichton. But I like how they like get this tiny little nuance and utilise it in the comic strip. I think that's brilliant.
Mm. It's the kind of thing I love. I've got a load of audiobooks at the moment which are that kind of detective, hard-boiled, like, tell me where Rico is kind of thing. And this just falls into this, and it just works for me. He wants to see Vinnie Van Gogh, not Van Gogh, you know.
No.
And it's just names like that, you know, like Jimmy the Bastard and things like that. I'm maintaining that Dr. Hall is probably somebody who works on the magazine.
Could be.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's going to be, or it's the artist's wife.
Next up is news from the Dwarf, and the highlights are confirmation that Dwayne and a new director are part of Series 6, and also that there will be no Hattie. Craig has been busy and has a breakfast show. Danny John Jules is recording a record. Wonder what that could be.
Well, no, it specifically says that it won't be tongue-tied. It says the recording won't include that or any other song from Red Dwarf. Yeah, it will. It was tongue-tied when he eventually...
Was it tongue-tied?
That's, yeah.
It's I like the this kind of, it sprinkles hints as to what's to come.
Yeah.
It mentions, like, we're looking for a new director. We didn't get the International Emmy this year. We lost to Drop the Dead Donkey. And then, of course, next year, they get Andy DeEmini. They win the International Emmy for Gunman of the Apocalypse.
Yeah.
It's just, now knowing what we know, you're looking at, like, oh, next year, they're actually going to win. The idea of Craig Charles getting up in the morning for a breakfast show, it just seems really wrong as well. Like, I can't do it. It's something that's not that memorable either. So I don't remember him doing a breakfast show, so we might not have managed
it. It was Kiss FM, which I think at the time was only in London.
Yeah.
So I don't think we'd have been able to pick it up anyway.
I'm surprised that the Americans actually liked Drop the Dead Donkey. It's a very, very British show, I thought.
Yeah.
I think it has as much of a cross-Atlantic appeal as...
Well, particularly as it was also, you know, they used to script it the week it was broadcast. Yeah. And there was a lot in it about news in the UK that week. Because I've gone back and watched old episodes of it, and there's a lot of jokes in it that you don't get anymore because you haven't got the context of what's going on. Obviously, if there's Robert Maxwell jokes, I'm still absolutely fine with that.
Absolutely.
But yeah, there's still a lot of it that is very funny. It's a worthy programme to beat them because it was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. I know a big thing at the moment, as we're recording, is the privatisation of Channel 4, or the possible privatisation of Channel 4. But one of the things I think that they've done so well over the years is comedy.
Yeah, absolutely.
You kind of get the feeling that... almost like in a sliding doors thing, that Channel 4 possibly could have picked up Red Dwarf. It's kind of along that way that they would have picked it up.
I think they've always tended to prefer their own original things rather than picking up something from somewhere else, though.
Yeah. No, I mean from the very beginning.
Yeah.
But and that All 4 for comedy stuff's really, really good streaming service.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't remember I don't remember Craig Charles appearing on Weather Watch or even remember Weather Watch.
So it mentions that in the same sentence as Ghost Watch. So I did wonder if Weather Watch was him presenting the weather and then them making out that there's a really bad storm.
And for years, people asked if it was real or not.
Yeah.
The other thing that I really liked on this was that there was a chance to be in the audience. And oh my goodness, I would have cut a bitch to get a seat in the audience.
And it was in Birmingham.
Well, it wasn't filmed in Birmingham. That was just the address to write to. 9 Crandall Place in Edgbaston, which is about 2 miles away from where I am now. And it's a residential street. So it was just someone's house, that PR company was.
Fucking hell.
You just sent an SAE. Stamped addressed envelope for anybody that doesn't know, just for a reply. And they were filming, recording dates penciled in for the 6 Saturdays from February 20th to March the 27th, 1993 inclusive. But this could change.
Yeah. Another thing they mention is that Grant Naylor are working on a magazine show called Big Crunch.
Yes.
And when I saw that, I was like, did I watch that? Because that's probably something I'd have watched as a kid. I can't remember it. I'm guessing because this is near the fallout, maybe a bit before the fallout, that's why it didn't happen. But
possible.
I was trying to remember if it actually did occur because the name rings a bell, but that could have been just for something else. Like,
just makes me think of One Big Crunch, which is an interlude track on White Zombie's Le Sexorcisto Devil Music Volume 1, which is a fantastic album. It's not as good as Astro Creep 2000, Songs of Love, Destruction, and Other Synthetic Delusions of the Electric Head, obviously. But it's still almost as good.
Yeah. Brilliant.
I love his version of Brick House that he did with Lionel Richie.
That is pretty good.
Yeah.
This is not a Rob Zombie podcast.
Yeah.
That did sound like Rob Zombie, though.
He's here.
If he was, I would do a sex week.
Anyway,
Rob Zombie is hot. Like, look at him.
Okay,
he would. Oh,
he's about to ruin monsters.
Moving on. Yeah. Next up is the Ed By interview, and for me, as fascinating and interesting and brilliant as this was, 2 pages before they even discussed Red Dwarf at all felt a little bit naughty.
I liked that. Yeah. I liked him talking about how he got his break doing like hidden camera shows and stuff like that. And
yeah, I like the bit with, right in the very intro where they hint that there was the Smegazine had a lot of resistance from the BBC receptionist to even get in there to interview him. And then, yeah, he's talking about filming the detectives with Jasper Carrot and Robert Powell, which I never quite worked out why, but there was a signed photo in my local chip shop of both of them filming the detectives at some point. So I don't know if they'd maybe filmed an episode near to where I lived, possibly. Yeah. Obviously, Jasper Carrot's from Birmingham, so it wasn't very far away. So, yeah.
I need to watch that. I loved Jasper. I still do love Jasper Carrot.
Oh yeah, Canned Carrot was great.
Yeah, a lot of it's on YouTube, but I've managed to collect a lot of the albums over the years because he used to do. Obviously, it's the same now. It's like a comedian will do a special, every year or so. And that Jasper Carrot did that a lot, and I've got a lot of them. And yeah, I mean, we were looking at a potential special because we were talking about how Chris Barry's in the live show he used to do every weekend.
Is he?
Mm, Chris Barry's like one of the early people in that. Grant and Naylor wrote for him as well.
I knew they'd written for him.
Yeah, but there's a couple of episodes knocking around on YouTube, so, but I found them and then I lost them, so I think they got taken down.
Fair enough.
My favourite bit in this interview, though, is where he was talking about working on Girls on Top, which was a programme that Ruby Wax was on, saying that Ruby Wax was difficult and wanted me thrown off the show. Fortunately, I married her, so that problem went away.
Also, I love any interview where Filthy Rich and Cat Flap gets a name check. I had the videos of Filthy Rich and Cat Flap. And I've watched it more and actually like it more than the Young Ones, which is a slightly controversial thing to say.
I love the Young Ones.
Yeah.
I've never seen Filthy Rich and Cat Flap. I should probably rectify that. However, is a controversial opinion, I never liked Bottom.
What? Bottom is better than both of those
things. Not better than the Young Ones in any fucking way.
Oh, it's the best. The Young Ones is just kind of there and watchable. I haven't seen Filthy Rich and Cat Flap.
The Young Ones is absolute fucking genius.
Bottom is hilarious.
Is it though?
I love a bit of slapstick. Anyway, we're not talking about Bottom. That would probably be a fine thing, lol.
There we go.
On this.
Caption competition then.
Oh, well, it was shite, wasn't it? The winning gag was a fucking David Meller joke, and it's 6 months after they set the competition. What the fuck?
Probably had to wait that long to get any. They're like, have we got to go with these? Let's wait and see if we get any that aren't shite.
Putting it into perspective, right? That's as long as we took between recording the Smegazine episode.
That's fair.
So maybe back and a David Meller joke, though, Mark.
True.
No, just a Robert Maxwell one.
Yeah.
The other half of that page is the only ad in the entire Smegazine, and it is for the Red Dwarf fan club. There isn't even a Superman or a Judge Dredd advert in this issue.
Well, should we describe what the actual picture is?
Well, it's recycled from an earlier issue.
Yeah.
Because it was on a quiz a couple of issues ago, this picture.
It's a gentleman in a cagoule with Spock ears, a moustache, fishnet tights, a Smeghead t-shirt, a bra, and he's holding a pair of flares in his hands saying, I'm not going to wear these. What do you think I am? A pervert. I'd rather join the Red Dwarf fan club. Which is a mixed message.
I hadn't thought of that. It really is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, 90s.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong, we've all worn this outfit. But
not the Spock ears. I wouldn't wear fucking Spock ears.
Kurt might have.
Yeah.
But it's just, we were talking about in the last episode how, you know, they weren't going to sell you a copy of the magazine because there's, you know, the word sex on the front cover and Chris Barry's shirtless getting his knickers rubbed. And then you look in this one, and this one's on, you know, they're not shy about drawing the balls. And he's manscaped.
Yeah.
I thought you'd faint.
I think we're going to move on. Okay. We're going to talk about the Evolution comic strip. Mm. And the very first thing that stuck out to me was, fucking hell, the art is magnificent.
It is.
A chap called Roger Langridge did this one.
Yes.
The second panel of Rimmer, I think, looks absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
It's so nice. And I don't know whether it's whether it's that art style or if it's the actual technology getting better so you could draw different things, because it's blatantly hand done.
Yeah.
But it just seems to be better. you know what I mean? It's, you know, it's really bright and contrasty. I don't know whether that's just because of the copy we've got, but it's just, it really stands out against the other ones.
It does. Roger Langridge wrote for Judge Dredd a fair bit around this sort of time.
Mm.
Actually, no, I think most of his Judge Dredd stuff was later, in 96-ish. He'd also written for some like Hellboy spin-offs later on and things like that.
Yeah.
And some Star Wars comics, but this is mostly later on.
Yeah. It's a real like little melting pot of artists just before or working on the side of them doing their bigger thing.
Yeah. He's also got a comic that he writes called Knuckles the Malevolent Nun, which is a fucking fantastic title.
I need to look that up.
Yeah.
I'd read Knuckles the Malevolent Nun.
Yeah.
So, yeah. The solid gram predicts hard light.
It does.
Yes. It makes me wonder, is it something they knew about? Or...
I don't think they did. I think it's an obvious thing that Rimmer wants to be.
I do like the fact he goes to grey. I've always liked the idea that Rimmer was grey in his very
early, yeah.
When he gets devolved, for lack of a better term,
Well, he doesn't just go grey in this when this is a story where there's basically like an evolution machine that accidentally becomes a devolution machine.
Yeah.
And, Rimmer gets devolved into a silent movie complete with caption cards for when he's speaking, which is an excellent idea.
Yeah, proper old school ones as well, with the twirly pattern in the corners. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
And then you've got, obviously, Lister devolves into an ape, Cat evolves into a cat, and Crichton devolves into a vacuum cleaner.
Yeah.
I laughed out loud at Crichton's devolution. I howled at that. It was magnificent.
Yeah. I love the fact he panics as well. The second he realises what's happened to him, he starts yelling for Holly. Because he knows that now they are, when the other two devolve back to animals, they are buggered. So he engages panic mode immediately.
The one question I do have is, as this is an official Red Dwarf product, does this mean it's canon? And is there still an evolved pig in stasis on Red Dwarf?
No. Definitely not canon. It'd be cool if it was, but no, the comic, it's a different universe. I think they mention this somewhere else in this issue, where it talks about the different universes between the books and the series. This is a third universe.
And it's the only way they could get away, I think, with drawing a naked woman from the back is she's not a woman, she's a pig woman. There's bum in this.
With a curly tail.
Curly tail.
Yeah. But no, I loved it. I thought it was wonderful. I genuinely laughed out loud, sat on my own, reading a computer screen version of a magazine, I howled with laughter. It was wonderful. Absolutely yes. Wonderful.
I like the fact that as soon as they realise that she's now an evolved woman, Lister immediately tries it on and she tells him to get stuffed because he was going to eat her.
Because she was evolved from his bacon sandwich.
Yeah. She immediately locks herself into stasis, which I think is hilarious. It's just like, she knows automatically what a stasis booth is, locked herself in it, until pig kind evolves until her level of intelligence. Can you imagine
perfect.
One of the Dave series, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, a stasis booth opens and this pig woman gets out?
I'd love it.
That would be a little bit of a deep cut.
Yeah.
There aren't going to be many people that are going to get that reference, because even I wasn't still reading this magazine at this point, thanks to the bloody cover of the previous issue.
Have you got a bit of a bee in your bonnet about that one?
It's fucking annoying, man. I hadn't started reading Kerrang yet. I was, you know, I was devoid of magazines for a while.
I'm wondering now, did young Colin, because you said that you ended up taking a job with them as the paper, and were you trying to get in and take them apart from the inside?
No, I just wanted to earn £1.80 a week.
My God.
Fucking hell.
It was quite a small paper round, but...
£1.80?
£1.80, which I then used to spend on Kerrang, usually. That was about...
From his shop?
I think, yeah. Yeah, so basically I used to get paid in Kerrang and a chocolate bar or two.
Paid in Kerrang.
A chocolate bar for £1.80.
It's worth it. I got a podcast out of it.
Well, yeah, yeah.
True. Next up is an article on CyberZone. And we've covered CyberZone. And this article very much makes it look much better than CyberZone was.
I have not yet listened to our episode on CyberZone because I didn't think I watched it ever. But I read this article yesterday and then thought, I'm going to find CyberZone and watch an episode on YouTube. So I found one and watched it, and I definitely remember it. So I've already downloaded the episode, so I'm going to listen to it and see what you guys thought. It was dated.
The fact that in the first couple of paragraphs it mentions that Mel Bibby's there, I believe I say this on the CyberZone episode when I was like, I'm sure that's Mel Bibby in the audience. It was. But it has to be the crew were the audience. The bit that was kind of weird for me is they talk about that there's a bit they hand out sheets to the audience to do certain chants.
Yes.
But they're all like one word or two word chants.
Yes, I remember them all shouting bot, bot, bot.
Yeah.
Which amused me in a very childish way. but they'd asked the audience to dress weird, and some of them hadn't dressed weird enough, so they went to the stores to get them some costumes and got them the fucking costumes from Holoship to wear.
Nice.
That's awesome.
That is pretty awesome. It does have some quite fair criticisms about VR, but it does feel like it was pushing this program as being cutting edge and really edgy. And Craig Charles's enthusiasm is great, and that reflected in CyberZone itself. It's just a shame that it was cack.
It was cutting edge at the time, though, wasn't it? It's just 30 years later.
Yeah. I mean, when we watched it, we talk about the how slow the actual VR is with what happens in it. And in this, they're like, they're doing two episodes a day. It's like, God, that sounds long.
Do you know what? It didn't seem that slow when I was watching it, but that's because I started watching it at about 10:30 last night when I had the idea to watch it. So I changed the speed on YouTube to double speed.
God,
fuck's sake.
Yeah. I haven't got time for all that, you know, watching things at the proper speed and listening to podcasts at the proper speed.
I don't know. I genuinely don't know how you do it. Genuinely don't.
I've got some podcasts up to 3x speed now.
I never do that. I should do, really. I've got a lot to listen to. Another thing that they mention in this is what Broadsword were also working on at the time, which is Time Busters.
Yeah, which when they meant it, they said It was a game a little bit like Nightmare, but involved a historical time-travelling London bus. Mm-hmm. I'm sure I remember that.
I found a few on YouTube, and as it says in the... It's Michael Troughton, son of Patrick Troughton from Doctor Who. And when you look at it, like, this is Doctor Who, but he's got a bus. He's dressed in that, like, I've got a sports jacket and trainers and sunglasses where one of the lens flips up. You know, it's like, I'm probably working in the Max in Saved by the Bell. I am frigging cool. But I'm about 35, you know, and yeah, it's an interesting show because it's kind of like Treasure Hunt as well. Because they're running around in public.
Androids next then.
Mm.
Well, yeah, I've made no notes on this other than overstayed its welcome.
Yeah, pretty much.
I still enjoyed it, but this is where I get the nostalgia. I remember this at the time of reading this as a kid and thinking like this, that this is just like a soap. It is a soap.
Yeah.
And that the evil villain's got the massive chin and huge nose. And there's a joke in it where he makes a big speech and then he goes, God, that new monologue chip makes all the difference. I love that joke. But
fine.
Fun page.
Yeah, next up is the fun page. And welcome back to the fun page. It's been a few issues and I love the fun page. And this one has a rimmer gag and a cat sass. And it's actually not as good as previous fun pages, but it's still good.
I like the rimmer one is a spot the difference, where there's a picture of normal grey rimmer, and then rimmer still alive, not a hologram, dressed as an admiral. And the five differences are, the one on the right is different in the following ways. He had half-decent parents. He went to a better school. He worked for a captain with some shred of intelligence. He didn't have a bunkmate who constantly interrupted his revision by spraying the contents of sugar puff sandwiches around the room. And five, he was a lucky bastard.
Very clever.
Yeah.
I really need to try sugar puff sandwiches.
I mean, we could do a special on Red Dwarf cuisine.
Video special on the Twitter of us eating sugar puff sandwiches.
Well, we could also try the the chili chutney sandwich,
fried egg chili chutney sandwich. I'd be happy with the chili chutney. I just don't like fried eggs.
Tell you what, sign up to the We Made This Patreon, and we'll start doing that for our Patreon subscribers.
What was the one with the?
Are you going to talk about
the surprise?
Peach surprise.
Peach surprise.
Followed out peach full of curry, full of vindaloo curry sauce.
This is such a bad idea.
I might give that one a miss.
My media thought, this is how I die.
Next up is Purple Alert, which is an A to Z list of perils in space by Holly in character. And, I mean, it's been a while since we've done Smegazines, but could have sworn there was something very similar to this in a previous previous issue.
I think there's been similar sort of things, but I really enjoyed this bit. I thought it was really good. I think Steve Lyons does a really good job of writing in Holly's voice in particular. I mean, this could easily have seemed like a filler article, but I don't think it did.
Yeah, it kind of shows an understanding of lore as well when he's, you know, talking about Simoons and quasars and all that kind of stuff. It does also show Steve Lyons is a pretty big Holly fan, because I think Holly turns up more than anyone else in terms of original content. Because, I mean, straight after this is the Hollygrams.
Yes.
Yeah. So for me, yes, I did like this article.
Yeah.
However, I felt that the deep references were so deep that it could have been considered a bit gatekeepy. I'm not sure whether that's actually a problem in the Red Dwarfs magazine, but
that's the thing. This is, you're not going to really get casual fans buying the Red Dwarfs magazine.
True.
It was and remember how much fucking absolute nerds we were for it at the time.
Mm.
You know, we lived and fucking breathed it. And, true. You know, that this magazine was made by fans for fans. And that's absolutely, I don't think that's particularly gatekeepery. If it was an article in a mainstream magazine like Starburst or SFX or something like that, and it had all of the references that other people wouldn't get, that's when it would become gatekeepery. But this is in the fan space.
Do you know what? I'll buy that for a dollar. I think you're right, Colin.
We're already inside the gate.
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah, okay, fair.
I do like the illustration of Mr. Flibble.
I love all the art, actually.
Little Jimmy Osmond does look like Problem Child, if you remember the film Problem Child.
Fucking hell, Carl.
He does.
I didn't say you didn't. I just said fucking hell, Carl. Only you.
I also really like that in very much in character for Holly, she's completely running out of ideas at the end of things that she can put in for the A to Z. So there's xenophobic simulants, Yankee Doodle Dandy, and zoos.
I mean, they're self-explanatory, aren't they, zoos?
Yeah.
Next up is holograms, and I remember I pointed out that there was a missing month, and that's actually addressed in the holograms.
I'm glad you remembered that, because my notes say, did we notice that issues 9 and 10 were both noted, were both November?
I think we did. We missed one. I don't think we noticed that it was both November, but I think what we did was we noticed that there was a missing month. So, yeah, I'm not going crazy, after all.
Yeah, you are.
Well, not for that reason.
I also very much like the fact that somebody had noticed, which we hadn't noticed, that in issue 9, there's a special thanks to They Might Be Giants. And they explain that just so happens that 75% of the staff working on this magazine are declared They Might Be Giants fans. So they must provide some inspiration to our fevered brains. That's good. I like They Might Be Giants. They're fucking fantastic.
Were they the ones that did I Would Walk 500 Miles?
No, they fucking weren't. That was the Proclaimers.
Oh, no, Mark.
Then it was They Might Be Giants.
They did Birdhouse in Your Soul was their biggest hit in the UK. But
It's quite similar then.
Oh, God, Mark.
They also did the Malcolm in the Middle theme tune, You're Not the Boss of
did
Me.
Did they?
Yes.
I never watched that.
It's quite good. But yeah, They Might Be Giants are brilliant.
I want to clarify there that me going, oh God, Mark, wasn't because Mark wasn't quite sure. It was more the, oh God, he's just kicked Colin essentially in the knackers.
And also, nice bit of contrast to the previous issue, there is a letter praising Nigel Kitching's artwork.
Good.
Well deserved.
I agree.
And there's a bit at the side called the Junior Encyclopedia of Space, where they're going a little bit more in depth into sort of more cerebral questions. And this is where the bit that I was talking about earlier with the book universe and the TV universe comes in, which, you know, that's quite early for something like that to be explained.
Yeah, it was a really sophisticated answer, actually, which I liked. I also liked the utter bullshit where they claimed that Smeg in Red Dwarf is not short for Smegma.
Yeah.
Bollocks. Yeah. Bollocks. Next up is the Scudder's comic strip called The Good, The Bad and The Ugly. Did you like how I did that? I did the question mark. I portrayed the question mark.
That'd be good if it was a question mark, but I'm looking at it right now. It's an exclamation mark.
It's an exclamation.
Oh, so it should have been The Good, The Bad and The Ugly. Yeah. There we go. I did it right the second time. Bollocks.
Is Mark saying it that way? Is an exclamation mark?
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Oh, it's like Ron Burgundy reading the news.
God, I want a drum to dunch put in this episode.
You can edit if you want.
No.
There we go. So it's narrated with rhyming panels and it's got the polymorph in it. What's not to love?
Did anybody immediately think, because I had to double check what month this came out in on the front. Did anyone think it was like the night before Christmas?
It's got a similar sort of cadence in the, similar sort of rhythm to the words, yeah. I think it's a reference to the Rupert the Bear annual?
Yes, I was thinking that because I had quite a few Rupert books as a kid. And
were they all in rhyme? I know they were definitely the format where it was a picture and a paragraph underneath.
I don't remember them being in rhyme, but they definitely had this style because this is how comic books were before.
Yeah.
The Americanization, I want to say, of it. I haven't read it in a very long time, but there's a very good book called The 10-Cent Curse.
Okay.
And it's all about how the sort of infiltration of comic books during the Second World War and kind of where it went from there. Or 10-Cent Plague, sorry. I believe it's on Audible, if anybody's got Audible. And yeah, it's a very good read about comics and the kind of the actual history of the publication and the style.
And I like the artwork in this one. Again, it's Rob Sharp is the artist. Mm. And I did a bit of research on that. But if you just search for Rob Sharp comics, there's a guy called Rob Sharp who's part of the Sharp Brothers who've done a lot of work for Disney. And it's not that Rob Sharp.
Right.
This is a different Rob Sharp who wrote for the British Batman Monthly comic. Oh, was nice. his main sort of credit.
See, this is the thing, right? Back in the 90s, obviously you had 2000 AD, which is very British.
Yeah.
But you also had, I mean, there was a Marvel UK back then. It's kind of fizzled out a bit now. But also you had a big one for me was the Transformers UK strip.
Yeah.
Which actually carried on a different continuity from the Americans.
Okay.
And I used to have a collection of them, which is probably where I keep thinking about doing the Red Dwarf collection. But some of the British strips were so well written. Like, the art was good, but the actual scripts and the stories, and there was more of a grittiness to it that I remember as a kid just being like, this is different. You know, I remember stories about Transformers being in comas and like falling in love with women. It was really like quite outside the box stuff for children.
See, I never really read much of the Transformers comics. I obviously used to play with the toys and watch Transformers the movie. But there's a guy I used to play a lot of gigs with years ago in Tamworth who now lives in Derby, who's a Transformers YouTuber, a guy called Thew.
Oh, Thew. I know
Thew. Do you know Thew? Awesome. Yeah. He used to play drums in a load of bands that I used to gig with years ago. And,
I don't know Thew.
Well, Thew does basically sort of Transformers, like, unboxing videos and reviews and stuff. Mm. But he also, every now and again, does a video called Knock Off Beatdown, where he gets all, like, the really crap bootleg versions, like the Postman Pat Transformer and stuff like that, and does a little bit of a review and then smashes them to pieces or blows them up and stuff like that, and they're very, very entertaining.
Yeah, he came when I had a radio show back in the day when one of the Transformers, might have been the first Transformers movie, came out. Yeah. And Thew came on because he was the biggest Transformers expert I could think of.
Yeah.
But yeah, he does very well for himself. Yeah,
he does. It was recently referenced in an actual Transformers cartoon, I believe.
Yeah,
his name was in the Transformers writing code type thing, and his name was written in it, which is cool.
Lovely chap as well.
Yes,
yeah,
that's pretty mad. Yeah. That you know someone like a famous YouTuber.
Yeah,
did you know that Shipwrecked and Comatose is on YouTube?
I did, because most of the podcasts on the network
exactly
are on YouTube, apart from my other ones, because they've got music in it. Anyway.
Yeah, so if you look hard enough, you can find Shipwrecked and Comatose on YouTube, but
you can't see us, it's just the audio.
Mm.
No, and we've never really promoted it, but yeah, apparently we're on YouTube as part of the network thing. Yeah, I should probably do more about that, but I haven't. Moving on. Do Not Touch is an article on the history of the hologram. And it confirms what we already knew, that black and white was too expensive in the show and that the H on the forehead is cheap.
Yeah.
And what I didn't expect was a massive, massive dig at the culture of expensive covers on 90s comics. I was a victim of that. The amount of pretty covers of American Marvel comics that I had to pay double, triple the money for.
Because they got a hologrammy cover.
Yeah, and that culture's pretty much died completely subsequently. But it made me smile that they had a dig at something that really irritated me at the time that this comic book came out.
Yeah.
There's also a really nice bit where basically they're talking about it's like a chronological history of holograms and how they're treated in the show. And in doing so, he's trying to sort of resolve the many, many continuity errors, which we've stated loads of times we don't care about at all. But there's quite a nice bit where he's basically saying it's possible that Crichton invented the light bee because that only showed up a little bit after Crichton did. And it fits with, you know, that's why Rimmer was at one point able to fall through a table. And that's why he had to be in the cage thing when they went to that moon in one of the early episodes. And that was never done again. I like it when they come up with quite good ideas like that. So yeah, that's cool.
It's that thing of, like we say, we're all fans, so we let a lot of things slide. I just like the idea of a guy sitting down going, I wonder if I can actually connect the dots.
Yeah,
you know, it's fascinating thing to attempt. And again, other shows have done it. Like, I mean, a very big example of that is Spider-Man No Way Home.
Yes.
Spoilers if you haven't seen
that. Hold on, is that the latest one?
Yeah.
Right, no spoilers, because okay. I haven't fucking seen it yet, and I'm going to watch it soon.
fuck's sake. I think it is layered. There's a lot going on in it.
Yeah.
And it pays off a lot of fan service.
Cool.
I do find the fandom obsession with canon and justifying canon in your own way tiresome. I think I used to care about canon, and I did find kind of knitting canon together and kind of rationalizing things, and I don't want to do it anymore. I just don't.
It depends on what it's for. Red Dwarf, there's so many fucking inconsistencies that it just doesn't matter. It's fun.
Yeah,
but there are other things where I'd be like, no, that can't happen.
Well, a bit behind the curtain, I'm currently starting work on what might be a new podcast, which is a wrestling related one, and I'm kind of trying to do it as a writing exercise where I go back into the history of stuff that didn't work and plot it out. Okay. Again, and make it work, but trying to make it work in the context of what's going on at the time. So I can't just turn around and go, and then so-and-so from WWE comes in and that's what happens. I have to use what I've got.
Okay.
And
that sounds like a tough gig, I'll be honest.
The first draft of the first episode is already 6 pages, and I've not even really got out of the world building of it. So it's only going to be one a month. I've already decided that.
Yes.
Yeah. One a month is the best thing.
That's my major recommendation for people starting podcasts, go monthly.
I actually had a sort of bit of a chat with another podcaster who does a wrestling one. He only does one a month, but he said he writes, it's just a recap show, same as we do, but for Monday Night Raw in the 90s, but he still does 30 pages of notes just recapping a TV show. And my heart sank, because this is not recapping anything. This is me like doing
being creative.
Being creative. And it's like, oh God, I don't go out enough as it is.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But so hopefully that will come to fruition. And if I sound really tired on the corresponding episode of this podcast,
there's a reason
why. But yeah, it's that thing of, you know, there's especially with something like Red Dwarf, there's so much lore, and some of it go, because it's, you know, it's what happened at the time.
Yeah.
You know, you can't do it. I love the idea of Rimmer being grey, but I would go mental if they went back and changed it.
Yeah, like remastered.
Yeah.
let's not. Moving on. Is Red any good books lately? And bizarrely, it's mostly harmless.
Mm. Why is that bizarrely?
Was it actually released in 1992?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, shit. I thought it was like a review of an old book.
No.
Okay.
This was the very long-awaited fifth book of the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy trilogy.
Oh, shit. Okay. Now it makes sense a bit.
Because it absolutely fits in with the audience, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Now, oh, right, I've got it completely wrong. Do you know, yeah, that makes shit. I'm a dumbass.
I pretty much agree with the review as well. It's fun, but it's not as good as the first four books in the trilogy.
Yeah. I think it puts it into perspective really well that, yeah, that's what it is. Yeah, I think you're right.
As a kid, I bought Mostly Harmless without having read. And I think I got about a third of the way in, a quarter of the way in. I was like, what am I reading? Because, again, the lore's so dense. I was like, what am I doing? It's only years later when I started to get into the radio adaptations.
Yeah.
Which I still believe, to be honest, is the best way to take in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
I love the books, but yeah. The radio is it's the original version.
Yeah.
And the theme tune's magnificent.
Yes. It is it's the only good song by the Eagles.
Oh, is it the Eagles?
It's the Eagles. There is also there was a compilation mixtape that came out in 2012, I believe it was, called Nerdcore Now, which was a load of nerd influenced hip hop.
Oh, I love it.
There's an artist called Klopp from Pop who put out a track called Don't Panic, which is using that as the backing, and then it's rap based on Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and it is utterly magnificent.
Yeah. I listened to a fair bit of nerdcore back in the day, and there's a couple of artists I still listen to now.
Yeah.
It was very much a passing thing, but there was some genuinely talented writers come out of there. Two that spring to mind is MC Frontalot, who invented the genre pretty much. But he's just a fantastic MC and writer.
Yeah.
And a guy called Schaefer the Dark Lord.
Yeah.
Who tends to write more horror-based stuff, but it's brilliant.
Yeah.
I've never even heard of nerdcore, but maybe I should listen to some.
Have a listen to Don't Panic by Klopp from Pop. I'll send you a link later. It's brilliant.
Okay. And we'll share that link on the socials as well.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Next up is another comic strip, or it's a sadvertisement, which is like a satire of cheesy detergent ads. And it's fun, but is the gag a bit tired?
I like that we get to see the Smeg Hammer.
True.
I like the ending, how it turns fast.
Yes.
It kind of made me think like this was a bit of a weird precursor to Crytee TV. because he's breaking the fourth wall, isn't he? And he's talking to us to get us to buy a new Smego.
Yeah.
Well, he did that in the Smeg Ups and Smeg Outs as well, though, didn't he?
Yeah, but that's not like an official episode, is it? It's but this kind of feels like a bit of precursor. The fact that Lister cries.
he's cleaned his sentimental T-shirt that he's never washed before.
So he wore it at his last gig. Chansky threw coffee over him. It was signed by all the London Jets, and Crichton's just proved a point that this is a really good washing liquid.
It's very Red Dwarf, isn't it?
It is. And you see Lister's bum.
You would have to wait until Captain Butler to see the real Lister's bum now.
Captain Butler.
Next up is the Talkie Toaster profile. And this was at least a pleasant surprise, and I like that it exists and that they bothered after they'd done all the other main cast to do this. And it's certainly my favourite of all the ones they've done.
Yeah.
I laughed at it existing more than it actually being any good. But, yeah, I'm kind of glad it exists.
I wonder what the next issue will be, because I've not looked at it yet, whether we'll get a Scutter. Or anything like
that. I hope so.
I do like that his the skills and hobbies are exactly the same.
Yes. And finally, the pinup is Rimmer Musketeers from Terraform, self-respect and confidence. And why? Why?
Those costumes are some of my favourite costumes in the entire series. That is probably Howard Burden going, you put a picture of that sodding costume in the magazine. Look at it. It's beautiful. Do you know how much work that was?
It's also possibly to appease that girl from last that Holly Graham's in the last issue who was going on about Chris Barry. It's another picture of him.
Mate, do you know what? It might be as simple as that as well.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're at the end of the issue. Carl, what was your favourite of the issue?
I think it's the evolution strip. Yeah, just the art style. It's funny. It's a tantalizing. She could still come out of stasis, guys. Season 14.
What about you, Colin?
My favourite bit was the Ed By interview. I thought it was really, really entertaining and really interesting.
For me, I'm with Carl. It is the Evolution comic strip. It was just laugh out loud funny. And when you sat on your own and you manage to, and you read something that actually manages to make you laugh out loud, that's the show of some, to me at least, of something that's really fucking funny.
Yeah.
What was your most meh moment of the issue then, Carl?
It was probably the fun page. As much as the joke for Rimmer's thing was okay, it didn't grip me at all. So that's the fun page.
So it was a not fun page for you.
No, this issue is a really strong issue.
Yes,
it has to be said.
I think so, and particularly after last issue was quite poor, it's noticeable as well.
Yeah, they really bounce back on this one. But out of a very strong issue, the fun page is probably the bit that lets it down.
Colin?
Caption competition. Again, letting the fucking fans write stuff. Don't do it. They're shit.
I forgot about that. Yeah, no, that sucks as well. Yeah.
I was really disappointed with Do Not Touch. I actually wanted some kind of like proper science-y stuff. And we've had enough show recaps, really. Mm-hmm. But I think it's got to be the caption competition as well, because that really was awful.
Yeah, I don't think they'd got enough sciencey stuff in 1992 about holograms yet. It was just holograms that you get on the front, you know, a shiny sticker and stuff like that.
Maybe you're right.
You know, Tupac hadn't appeared at Coachella yet because he was still alive at that point.
But he still could be alive.
The amount of albums he's put out since he died, it seems likely.
Another podcast.
No more podcasts. Talking about podcasts. Colin, where can people find you on the internet?
So I've got two other podcasts. Free with this month's issue, which is about old free magazine CDs. Like Kerrang, Metal Hammer, that kind of thing, Q, which you can find wherever you listen to this. Just search for Free This Month's Issue. There's also We Dig Music, which is me and my friends Ian and Tracy arguing over what the best music was from various different years. And it's lots of fun.
Carl, what about you, other than this exciting new wrestling podcast?
Well, you can find me on Right in the Childhood, my show where I sit down with a guest and talk about
what?
One that's just launched is Geek Polymath, where I sit down and interview someone about something.
Stop this! About.
There is one called Aunt Nell, where I talk about a language that we back in the day, even though I am actually not gay.
What are you doing?
Carl, I think you should bring back Life's Milestones. That was really good. I enjoyed that. Particularly the theme tune at the end.
Life's Milestones. And there's so many ideas that I've got. And there's still a few to come out. So keep it peeled. On all my links.com / Mr. Carl.
yeah. Right, I've got podcasts too. Usual spiel.
Quite similar to Carl's.
HC at carlbryanisabellend.com. So thank you for listening to Shipwrecked and Comatose. Until tomorrow's episode, which will be more of the same tat.
And then there's that other podcast I'm doing where I talk about ultraviolet. That's not come out yet, but we've recorded the episodes for it.
We actually have.
Yeah,
I don't know where to put them.
Beautiful. That's my favourite. What podcast are you doing? Anyone has ever done?
Bedtime.
Shipwrecked and Comatose, a Red Dwarf podcast, was created and produced by Mark Adams and Kurt North. You can find us on Twitter at Red Dwarf Pod, and we are part of the We Made This Podcast Network, which can be found online at wemadethispod.com or on Twitter at We Made This Pod.
Elsewhere on We Made This. We dig music.
This is evidence enough that I was kind of scraping the bottom of the barrel.
Particularly because your initial choice was from 1986.
It was on a 1978 playlist. People that do year-based playlists need to calm the fuck down and check their facts. I mean, granted, I am a person that's done a year-based playlist and I need to calm down and check my fucking facts, which is fine, right?
Yeah, that's fair.
But, like...
Or you can just do what I do and like just say, no, it's a compilation album that's released in that year and I'm definitely going to do it.
I can't do that because Chris Rea has a time machine. He released a compilation of his mid-80s tracks.
But you know,
earlier.
The weird thing is, so yeah, we switched this one out quite late on in our preparation for the
last
podcast,
night.
And it made fuck all difference to any of our notes.
Dream Given Form, a Babylon 5 podcast.
On a science fiction heavy TV series, I'm not sure how much he can push the boundaries that way. So I think it has to be in terms of storytelling,
yeah,
and character, and progressiveness, I think. And kind of looking back at Sensei, I think that's a good way of going forward.
So what are your thoughts kind of around the idea of the CW network being a network to pick up the Babylon 5 reboot?
I don't know whether it's the right one or not, in all honesty.
Mm.
And with the recent kind of announcement that CW's being sold, which is why the pilot script's not been picked up.
Frame to frame.
The overarching narrative of Nolan's trilogy is so good. Nolan dedicated an entire movie to us understanding Bruce Wayne and why Bruce Wayne wanted to become the embodiment of fear. That's what that groundwork is, what then allows the Dark Knight to become the incredibly tortured, bleak, like almost nihilistic beast that it is, in which there's no such thing as a hero. There are no heroes.
No, exactly. But as a question to you, are you suggesting then, if a film hypothetically was to exist without giving us the Batman Begin portion, but to exist in, I don't know, the second or third year of the Batman story, that is dark, bleak and nihilistic, if it was not to have the Batman Begins, do you think it wouldn't quite work as well as The Dark Knight?
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This Podcast Network.